Welcome to Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Barr. Most of you probably already knew that. It's a hot and sunny August day in East Texas. It is the third. Yesterday seemed like it was the first, but yesterday was actually the second. We've lived in this house 16 years as of yesterday. My Georgia Helen Parr has been dead. They buried her on August 2nd, 16 years ago, my mother. Anyway, welcome to Blind Like Me, and our guest today is a fellow who's familiar to most of you if you listen to the Blind Handyman Show. His name is Donald Patterson.
Hey there.
That's his real name. His real name is Donald Marlin Patterson.
Donald Marlin is
Donald
correct.
Donald Marlin, after your old Marlin, your old dad.
Yes, sir.
Phil Miles Mandelstein.
That's right.
He got a big kick out of Miles Mandelstein. Miles Mandelstein was this Jew kid I played with. You can't say that, can you?
Yeah,
Jewish.
I think Jewish, yeah.
Jewish. I'm sorry. I called him a Jew kid. Jewish kid that I played with. Hope you didn't lose any Jewish people. When I was a kid, and Marlin told Marlin about him, and every time he saw me after that, how's Miles Mandelstein.
That's right. And his very Chicago accent.
Yeah. Oh, he had a very heavy Chicago or New York or some kind of accent that was foreign to me. Anyway, your level of vision is actually quite well. What do you figure you see?
Well, I see 2200, and that's been several years ago. I actually am in need of some new glasses, and I'm going to do that, and I'll get it checked out again. But they listed it that. And that used to be in my left eye that was my better eye, uh-huh. And now my right eye has become my better eye, so I think I've lost a little vision in the left eye, but I would say around 2200, 20 whatever's a little lower than that.
Which would mean that you see at 200 feet what someone else sees at 20 feet.
That sounds like, that. I think that's that, it.
I think that's right.
Yeah.
But it just seems like to me you see real well, you know?
Well, you know, I guess because we've known each other forever. Yeah. And when I was younger, I really didn't have any problems getting around and probably took a lot of stupid chances that I don't do, you know, like running across four-lane highways. And
well, yeah. We
stuff
all
like
did
that. I've kind of slowed down on that. But
yeah.
I could... You know, in an emergency, if I really had to, and out in the country, I could probably drive some kind of vehicle. I don't ride my little scooter anymore, but...
But if it was an emergency and you had to get to town...
I could probably do it.
You could. You think you could weave
I would have to pick my... Come the back roads and...
Come up Gobbler's Knob to my house.
I could stay out of the ditches.
Yeah, and the other cars coming...
Yeah.
Well, that's what I've always said. If we'd been out of beer long enough, I'd just let you drive me. You know, I'd ride across the river with Pat if we'd been out long enough.
You know? I don't know about that river bridge. I
back
might
when I was, you know, there. It's really, really weird because they're fixing to widen that river bridge. You know that?
And they're buying out Lindis.
Yeah, they're
Lindis
buying out
is gonna
on
be
both
history.
Sides.
Yeah, both
and
sides.
And they're going to widen the river bridge now that there's no traffic out there. They voted our town wet.
Right.
3 months ago, and so there's no traffic out on 94 where we used to go get beer. And so now they're widening the river bridge. Doesn't make any sense. Speaking of bridges, did you hear about the bridge in Minnesota?
Yes. I must have been right there as it was happening. I mean, because they broke the Channel 13, which I always watch, just went into that from their newscast. I mean, during their newscast.
What a thing.
That was something, yeah.
Yeah, it really was. Just bridge just collapsed. I've been over that bridge going up to...
You know, I thought about that. I thought about what y'all going up to see the Prairie Home Companion show, and I said, "Yeah, main thoroughfare." I'm amazed.
Interstate, right?
And I'm amazed at the 30 or so that are missing. I don't know what if they've updated it less, but even that is a small amount, in my opinion, compared as to what could have happened.
Well, there were only two lanes open on it. They were repairing the bridge, and there'll be massive lawsuits. Tremendous. But, the water was only, they said, 7 feet deep, I think, at that part of the It's where the Mississippi River is, crossing the Mississippi. Anyway, you were born in, I guess, in Houston, weren't you?
Houston, September 15, 1942.
Which means you're going to be 65.
65, this coming September.
65, 1942, yes, and you have a sister that is Marlene older? Marlene?
Older. She will be, in fact, on the 5th of this month, 5th of August, she will be 66. And speaking of our dearly departed, Marlon will be dead on the 7th of September. He died a week before my 40th birthday. He's been dead 25 years.
So Marlene will be 66, 67.
66.
On the 5th,
August the 5th.
Which will be Sunday.
Right.
I guess it'll be Sunday. And so you, when you were a little kid, before they sent you away to the tortuous school for the blind, did you realize you had a problem or did it really even bother you?
You know, I think I was aware that I was different because, you know, and Marlon was blind as well, had less vision than I do. And, of course, when we hung around, he had several blind friends. So feeling different, maybe, I don't know that I felt that, but I knew about what blind people were, and I knew that I didn't see as well as other people. I guess maybe they told me, you know.
That you didn't see as well as your sister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
So y'all were that little house that I've been to over in on Victoria. Was that the house that
at that time? No, I was born actually over on off of Washington Avenue on Kansas Street.
Oh, really?
In a little rent house. And they in 42, my dad and them bought that place in 1946, but it did not have that house on it. It had a little 2-room for many years. Because they built the house that you came to, they built it in 1953.
Oh,
so
okay.
For 11 years, we lived in 2 rooms.
A little 2-room house.
Yeah, and when we first moved there, inside the city limits of Houston, it was outside toilet.
Really?
Yes.
You had a path.
Mm-hmm. I had a path.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
A Sears and Roebuck catalog.
Gene Ellis had that. And I go out to visit your house in summer. They had a path out to out to the islands. I found that so strange because I lived in the city all my life.
Well, we were in the city, and it just you know, dead end street, gravel, no pave. They finally upgraded everybody.
Yeah, and then the neighborhood got really bad.
Yeah, I said it went from an underdeveloped swamp to an overcrowded slum. It never had a heyday.
It did, didn't it? But you played, I guess, with all the other kids, with your sister and with the other kids as a child, and really things didn't seem too different. Being blind wasn't too bad until they sent you to Abby Young.
That's true. You know, believe it, as a child, and we had a large family as far as cousins.
Extended family.
And so always, yeah. I mean, and all the houses were frame houses up on blocks. I mean, so most of the kids played under the house, you know, and then had big dirt piles. God, they were, some of them were 3-4 feet off the ground.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I played, everybody treated me, normal.
Until
1948 when I made that fateful trip to Austin.
Well, of course, in 1948. That's what they did with blind children. They sent them to the school for the blind. Your daddy had been there, and that was, even as bad as it was for him, he realized that's what I'm going to have to do with Donald because there's no other way.
Marlene walked to school or rode her bicycles. We lived 6 blocks from Elliott Elementary, and I was not allowed to go there. I mean, I couldn't. I guess I could have tried to fake it, but I would have never made it. Marlene knew. You know.
Well, with your sight, you might have made it.
Maybe, you know, I might have, could have. We had a couple of students, you know, when I was working for the school district here that had faked it for quite some time. But after you get into the bigger grades,
They catch you.
They catch you. I couldn't have. I don't think I could have done it.
But, you know, like the other day, you'll notice she's giving it all away now. My slag out front.
I didn't pay attention.
It's not there anymore, but you could see it standing in my den, clear through the garage, and 40 feet down the driveway. You said, oh, yeah, I see it now. There it is.
Yeah.
That just blew. I mean, that's amazed me that you could see that. Because I have no concept of sights. I don't know, you know. But it just seems like to me you might have faked it. But that you didn't. They sent you to the blind school.
Right.
And I remember when you came to the blind school, you were really unhappy.
Yeah.
Almost as unhappy as I was. Mr. Durr constantly kind of picked on you because you were new and young, and you had a tendency to maybe cry a little bit and disrupt things with your bitter tears over what they had done to you. And I don't blame you.
You know, it was kind of strange. The first time they left me, I didn't cry.
Yeah.
The first, I mean, I remember, I thought it was neat having all those kids, and but it, see, it hadn't dawned on me at that point that when evening came, I wasn't going to go home.
You weren't going to go back
home.
No.
And so when they left, oh, it was hard. My mom was young. I mean, just like it would be hard on everybody's mother.
It had to be terribly hard on those ladies, your mother, my mother, to leave their six-year-old blind child 200 miles from home.
In the care of total strangers.
In the care of people who not only, you know, didn't even pretend to care. I mean, they didn't care.
That's right.
They were just, you know, once Mama left, it was, all right, Philip.
That's right.
You know, immediately. It was, you know, I know people get tired of me talking about how bad the blind school was, but it was traumatic. I talked to a guy this morning, he calls himself Yellowhammer. His name is Hugh Gillis. He said he went to the school and said, the first year is kind of strange, but he said by the second year, he didn't even want to go home. He was having so much fun.
Huh.
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine that. All I want to do is get away from you people. You don't like me, and I don't like you.
You know, I had some good times there in some regards. With a lot of activities that, say, when I eventually changed to public school that I didn't participate in. But let's face it, in my opinion, you know, there's no place like home.
That's
and
right.
I wasn't there.
And I remember... you know, as, like I said, I've known you since 1948, so we've known each other about almost 60 years. When you first came, you know, I didn't realize you saw that well because you were a Braille student. You were just like us. You were a Braille reader.
That is, there was the strangest thing. They didn't really have sight saving there, but they did ask you, or either I never saw it, let's put it that way. I remember I was about in the fourth grade when they came through putting all the new fluorescent lights.
I remember that.
And that's when it was kind of for the large print books. That's when I became aware of them. But actually, when they tested me, there's this true story. There was a teacher there. I don't know if it was Ms. Biggs or some young, we always had young first grade or kindergarten teachers.
Yeah.
And she laid this piece of paper on this page of the book, of a print book. And she says, "What can you see there?" Well, I didn't know that she was laying it under the sentence or something she wanted me to see. I thought, I mean, I was 6 years old. I said, I don't see anything. I thought she wanted me to read through to see what I could see through the paper. And I swear to God, I've told them, everyone that I know, that story, and that's the gospel truth. And that's why I am a Braille reader. Because my grandmother used to do that. She would read her Bible and she would highlight under each word with her finger. She traced her line, and this teacher had laid this paper marker under the sentence or word that she wanted me to see, and I didn't know that's what she was doing.
And so immediately they put you in
Braille
class.
Read Braille for 9 years.
Which served you well in later life, but at the time you didn't know that.
I didn't know it. I just, you know, I became actually a good Braille reader, read all my library books in Braille. And actually, when I got in the eighth grade, I just changed myself over to print.
You just became a sight-saving student.
F.E. Lewis came in ninth grade. I said eighth. It was ninth grade. And he said, "What do you read, Patterson, Braille or print?" And I said, "Print."
And so they brought you a sight-saving book, and away we went.
And actually, the kids, the Watson brothers, believe it or not, Johnny and Ronnie, we went to school with, taught me how to read. I could not read cursive. My mother's letters, that somebody would have to read them to me because I'd never done print.
I remember
I could print letters. I had a real pretty printing handwriting, but not cursive. I couldn't read it or do it. So the Watson brothers taught me how to do cursive out on the playground.
Just Ronnie and Johnny Watson.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Just I asked them. I said that, you know, I said, I don't know how you make, and so they showed me how to do the letter S and M, and I got finally caught on. I just didn't have the concept.
Because both those kids could see pretty well.
At the time, I think they actually eventually, in the later years, went blind. Both of them could not see at all.
Let's see who this is. I have no idea who it is. Should I answer it?
The mystery guest, stand up, please.
Hello?
It's Barr.
Yeah.
Just checking on you, bro. Your sliding door still working good?
My sliding door works fine, sir. I appreciate you.
All right. Anything else I can do for you?
No, sir. But I thank you, and I'll be back in touch.
Sir?
I said, I thank you, and I'll be back in touch.
Yes, sir. Have a good day.
All right. Thank you. How about that?
That's some service.
Guy had fixed my sliding door for nothing.
Over here at your house?
Yeah, he's a client of Lou Ann's. Of course, he owes us a buck or two.
Okay.
He's got some problems, but, you know. Anyway, so you were a Braille reader, and a good Braille reader. And when you say you read live, did you read those with your eyes or your fingers?
I read with my fingers. I read, and you know, believe it or not, I may have been a little ahead of my time, but I was a pretty avid reader. When probably the seventh grade, you know, we had Miss Parker was our librarian.
She was,
for the longest, and she was real strict about what she would allow you to have, depending on your age.
Yeah.
But then at the last, she got to where I could have any book I asked for. I mean, if they had it, I read a lot of good war stories.
Yeah, she was the library police, buddy boy.
Well, I mean, you weren't going to read anything smutty if you were underage in her library.
You weren't. I doubt if there was anything smutty in there. But she had been there. That old woman had been there forever. Who did I interview? Somebody, and she was their third or second grade teacher. And her big line was, you need to remember to do your part. This kid said, I don't exactly know what my part was, but that was Lula Parker's big line. Anyway, so so in my mind, your eyes have improved over the years. Because you were a Braille student, and I thought, well, hell, he's blind as I am. You know, he's a Braille. I knew he could see some, but, you know, now you just seem like you see everything. I mean, it's just...
Now that I'm getting older, they've actually declined some. But there was a time, you know, if wearing my glasses, and of course they're thick. I had cataract surgery is the problem, so I don't have any lenses in my eyes. So I wear thick glasses. And back when I was younger, I was pretty self-conscious and didn't like to wear my glasses.
Yeah.
But so I kind of outgrew that. Maybe when I was 50 or something, I can't remember. Anyway, and so now I wear my glasses, but here lately, it's got a bright light really bothers me.
Yeah.
Outside, so
and it's kind of used to love bright light.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, so you did the blind school thing until in
1956.
Not in the same grade with me, but I think I failed a couple of grades, and I was in your grade, and you passed me, I think. Maybe
you were ahead of me. And you were in the eighth grade. I caught you in the eighth grade, and I passed you, and you were still in the eighth grade. I think that's the way.
I spent several years there in the eighth grade. But then that was the last year. You did the ninth with F.E. Lewis.
F.E. Lewis, and then
the ninth grade.
The ninth grade. And then in Houston, their first attempt at a program for visually impaired students. And, you know, I don't not know that the lady had any special qualifications. I don't know if they had an education program at that time for what they called VI teachers nowadays. But she had been an English teacher.
Miss
Sarah Collins. She was a little old maid school teacher that drove the spiffiest car in the world. And she was our, and of course you had to go, Houston being big as it was, the downside to this was I got to stay home, but I had to go to school in a sense out of my district. Well, it was all HISD, but I had to go way across town. And so, because she only went to three high schools, it was all the time, and you only saw her like 3 days. She was really a coordinator. She got my teachers to make sure that they wrote big enough for me, or either gave her the work or she could type it on a large, pre-computer, but she had a large print typewriter that either she or some volunteer student would type my homework assignments. And that's what her job was. She was sort of the facilitator.
And so San Jacinto was just happened to be the closest school,
that's where
even though it was downtown.
Yeah, San Jacinto, two buses. I had to change two buses, and then she went to Lamar and Bel Air were her two other.
How did Ruby found out about this, right?
Yeah, and she kind of waited right the summer before, you know, and I would always start getting kind of sad about a month.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody knows the feeling. That's why we couldn't enjoy holidays. You get to come home on Thanksgiving, but about Saturday, you knew you had to go back Monday or
Saturday.
Saturday
night, you realize that tomorrow I've got to go back to that darn blind school.
And so, but actually, my mother found out about it. Somebody that she knew that called somebody that called her, and so she kind of did it as a little surprise. My dad, of course, was against it. And Oh, I don't think he wanted me to stay home, but he had his doubt. You know, you had to, Marlon was should have been from Missouri. You know, you had to show Marlon. And so he told me all the downsides. Well, you'll have to get up early, and I work nights. You'll have to get up by yourself. You'll have to be at the bus stop at 6:30, ride all the way across town. You're not going to be in that warm building up there and just walk across the street to school like you are at the blind school.
Yeah, but I won't have to put up with with the idiots like F.E. Lewis and Miss Momberg and Lena Lewis and just Mr. Tackard, who was just nuts.
Anyway, so so that was the deal.
And you said there wasn't any question in your mind when it was offered to you, this is what I'm going to do.
I could not believe it. When my mother said, what if you didn't have to go back to the blind school?
And you went, oh, really?
I said, well, I don't know. You know, because I didn't know, have any idea. And
I think probably one of the reasons she held off on it was because she knew Marlon wasn't going to approve. She knew that she'd been around him long enough to know that he wasn't going to sign off on that. And he didn't. All right, so we start you 10th grade in what we would call public school.
Public school, right.
So you didn't have to get up early in the morning.
Yep.
And you didn't have to ride those buses.
Right, cold.
Yeah, and anytime, whenever, you had to do it.
And then when school was out, it wasn't the best world for me because, in a sense, I wasn't on the socioeconomic standard as most of the kids. A lot of affluent people went to San Jacinto High School. Different ethnicities, a lot of Jewish kids, nothing that would keep me from socializing with them. But they had, they were, you know, the merchant's kids.
Yeah.
And so when 3 o'clock came, I went home. I went back to my little, and so Marlene, at the same time, was going to Milby High School, and that's where all her friends. Yeah. In fact, it's really strange. Even after I came home from the school for the blind at first, you know, people didn't even know Marlene had a brother.
Yeah.
Somebody saw me, well, never grow. Well, who is that?
Yeah.
You know, and there again, I didn't socialize with the kids I went to school with because they were way across town, and not being able to drive. See, it was better than TSB.
Well, I know where you spent your summers. What, any question about that? If we weren't on the phone, I was at your house or you were at my house.
That's
all summer long.
All summer long.
We were either talking on the phone or we were, in fact, we had a little code because my parents were kind of strict. Of course, we had one phone, one line, phone in one place in the kitchen.
Right.
And I think when I finally got an apartment, the garage apartment back there, they let me put an extension phone up there. My daddy put one up there. But what was our deal? We had...
Whoever called, let it ring one time.
And hang up. And I knew if that happened to me, that was Don Pat. I could call him right back. If my phone rang once at midnight, it was him.
Well, I think one time after years, we hadn't talked in several years, we'd even gotten grown, and I think my phone rang, and I called you,
and it was you. And it was me.
And it was like a six-year absence.
Yeah, it was a long time, because we were estranged from each other there for a good while during your first marriage. I think I only met that woman one time.
Well, that was, I knew your first one, but I missed number two.
You did. I guess you did. But you went to San Jacinto and then public school, graduated public school, and didn't have any idea what you were going to do. That would have been about 1958 or 60.
1960,
somewhere.
I graduated.
1960. And I was already selling brooms then, wasn't I?
Right, yeah, because I worked my last summer before I graduated.
Before your senior year, you worked the broom
crew? Yeah, uh-huh. Oh, God,
we introduced you to lots of good things. We taught you how to smoke and drink, didn't we?
I think I was already smoking.
Ah, probably
and,
so.
I did in 1960, and then after graduation, this is back in the days of the Commission for the Blind when they sort of controlled everything.
I don't know what they did.
I'm not sure either.
I don't know if they are.
Naturally, my parents didn't have the money to send me to college, but there, you know, were state funds for visually impaired. Well, I had gotten accepted on a test they took in high school to the University of Texas. Well, Truett Childers and whomever else was in charge, you don't want to go to UT. That school's just too big, which was the stupidest thing in the world because, believe it or not, at that time, you know, Bob Young at TSB would have given me a job. They hired a lot of ex-students, you know, back before they made some major changes. But anyway, so they said...
Probably would have.
Yeah, they said, we want you to go to Sam Houston. I didn't want to go to Sam Houston. But anyway, so I proved everybody right. I went to Sam Houston and flunked out immediately. I think I had three Fs and a D and a C. We're still trying to figure out how I got that C.
What did you do all that semester? Just drink smoke?
Drink beer and shout pool. And
the whole semester?
Yeah, played pinball.
And
I hated it.
That was pretty much it.
Well,
you were away from home, just like the blind school
yeah.
did, wasn't it?
And yeah. So they came and yanked, they pulled my ticket pretty quick.
But we had spent a couple of summers before that riding down to Galveston and Overland.
Yeah.
With Charles Alexander, who was Charles Alexander was our friend who went to school and ended up somewhere or another a couple of years out of school. He had a driver's license.
Oh, yeah. Goodness gracious.
And couldn't see really any better than you can.
How we survived some of that.
Well, Houston wasn't near as big then, and we wouldn't survive it now. But you know, at one time I had two crews. I had an out-of-town crew and an in-town crew, and I think Margie Sled was driving, and we did a lot of quart bottle beer drinking.
Yeah. But we survived.
We did survive. Off to college. I guess I didn't know your college. So you went off and just flunked out.
Yeah, came back in about, they came the second semester. I was actually on probation and actually doing well. And that's what even the dean told him, well, why are y'all taking him out of school now?
Yeah.
So that the dean really got in their face. He told him, he said, you know, you people, I didn't even know I had a student on campus with a visual impairment.
Yeah.
And why didn't y'all come to me? And now, I mean, all of my grades were passing at that time. He said, now y'all want to take him out of school. And he's, you know, and they said, well, we're just not going to spend the money. Let's go on. And so they took me out.
Yeah.
And so I went, you know, just after that, I've just floundered around from this job and that job, tried playing a little music here and there. And eventually, I guess, wound up, you know, working at Fox Photo. It was one of the better jobs I had.
But there were some times, and you might have come back and sold for us a little bit, and I'm not sure I was still selling brooms. I think I'd gone off to Corpus with somebody's wife by then. But anyway, you finally got a job at Fox Photo in a dark room.
Yeah.
Well, that's what blind kids did a lot of.
Well, that was a very good profession, occupation, I guess would be the better word, for blind people. It was just really geared, you know, vision, and in certain parts of it, vision was not a problem. I mean, you didn't need it. In fact, and if you were good working with your hands, especially in dark rooms, it was the perfect place. And there was a time, you know, no one at that time thought about digital anything.
No, there wasn't.
Nobody would have ever seen the end. I started maybe in 1968, and I'd had other jobs, you know, just here and there. Worked in a grocery store, worked for Raymond Sargent and his concession, you know, and his snack
in Houston
bar
there,
in
did
Houston.
You?
And I was, because I had tried, I started back to college in 64 just on my own, taking a class here at South Texas Junior College, and actually that helped too in the long run.
There in Houston?
Mm-hmm.
But you worked for the grocery store where Mr. Weehun.
Yeah.
He's a manager. I'll never forget that.
I worked for Raymond at night at Gray Tool Company in his stand, and then I went to school in the mornings. And then after I got that, I went to work in the grocery store for a while. And then finally I wound up at Fox. That about be 68.
Did Danny get you on at Fox, or how did you?
Danny was already working there, but actually I think I'm... I guess he took me. I think he found out about an opening and called me and said, you know, they've got, it wasn't in his department. It was working on the night shift. By then, I think he worked days.
But this was as late as 68 because I was playing clubs then, and seemed like every weekend you were at my house and we went out to Crow's Nest and played, or went to the Blue Angel. And
yeah, we went. I mean, you were playing full.
I was playing full time.
And working radio, I imagine.
I was working in Texas City, and you went to Texas City a couple times with me.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how exciting that was?
Yeah, I read the news one time, the news headlines.
Did you?
Yeah.
I don't remember that. Did you?
Yeah, I did.
I don't know.
I don't know how well. No, you apparently you didn't.
Didn't have anybody else to read them, so we have Don Patterson. Yeah,
Gate One Union Carbide or whatever.
Reading the news through the afternoon. And
just the headlines, I think. Y'all did this.
The headlines on 30 in the regular newscast an hour. Surely the regular newscaster guy probably going to get us some beer.
Yeah.
And he read. But you went to Texas City, and then you were out, you know, a lot of little crazy stories stories of stuff that happened to us while we were playing. The guy playing at this one club had a little low rail, and this guy leaned over to give a request and just fell head first onto the bandstand.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, and my friend Rudy came out, remember, knocked the beer over, and it spilt in my accordion.
Yes.
That cost me about $400.
I remember that.
Man.
Those were the days. That was at the Crow's Nest.
That, at the beer spilling, was at the Blue Angel.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Well, it had a kind of a higher rail.
Yeah.
And so he just knocked it off into your old accordion.
Yeah, I had my beer sitting up there.
But anyway, in 68, you finally got a steady job at Fox.
Right. Right, and I was just an employee running one of their machines, processing film, and then later on, because the turnover was pretty high, and especially you actually had more women, a lot more women working there than men, and so a lot of times, you know, their husbands didn't want them working at night, or they would come and go, and so I eventually got the opportunity to become a production supervisor.
Which you did.
Which I did.
For most people, it was kind of a throwaway job, but for you, you became production supervisor and stayed there.
Yes.
Good while.
Well, they even transferred me up to Dallas for a while. I stayed.
Yeah.
And, probably 12 or so, 13 or so years.
Up until the early 80s, you think?
Late 70s. So
yeah.
78, probably 10 years. Well, I'd worked, 10 years, yeah.
And then they began to digitize, or what happened?
To be honest with you, at that point in my life, Social Security, you know, we had just been able to start getting it, and Social Security looked a lot better than working for them.
Yeah.
Working, doing Social Security and earning what we were allowed to make, and then they had sold out. They sold out about three times there at the last. Company from Nebraska bought out Fox.
Yeah.
Then another company they merged, and they would bring their people in. And finally, it was just sort of like musical chairs, and I wound up without a chair.
Really?
You know. And they had moved by then way across town and going it late at night. And my wife was at that time was working for Kroger's in the daytime, so she was having to take me and come.
Well, you were 38 years old.
Yeah.
You know, 36, 37, 38 years old. And wasn't as near as much fun as it was when you was a kid.
Right.
So you quit them. They just ended up without a job.
Well, yeah, I think they quit me, was their story. I said, you can't fire me, I quit.
Then you moved out, your parents had already moved to Tomball, and so you moved out to Grangerland.
Right.
Which isn't that far from Tomball. That's why you moved out there, one of the reasons?
Well, no, actually, because it is. It's about 20-something miles. I just got a good deal on a... we were just kind of wanting to get out of Houston. And so
this is you and your first wife.
Yeah. And we'd found a little frame house that I bought, and I had to, that sort of started my handyman.
Fixing up things.
Yeah, and being the subcontractor. I mean, really, because, you know, a lot of it I did myself, and then would hire somebody or somebody that knew somebody that knew somebody.
Then we kind of skipped. You worked for your uncle or somebody one summer framing.
Well, I worked for a brother-in-law for a couple of years, actually. But that was after I was kind of getting the grant, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I worked two good years trimming. Well, we framed some in the summertime, but he was basically a trim carpenter.
Uh-huh.
And like framing, he had to have a whole crew. But on a trim job, he had a couple of sons. He couldn't get to stay with him. So he just hired me as his helper, and we two could work together. And so that worked out pretty good.
But you learned a lot about construction and building and how to frame. And
We hung cabinets and set doors, and I did the hardware on the doors. And
yeah, so you did that. But then you bought a little house in Grangerland and started working, built yourself a pump house and laundry house or some kind of...
A little pump house, yeah.
Yeah, and kind of fixing up around there. And then you got a divorce.
And then I got a divorce.
And gave her the house.
Well, you know, I had a lot of sweat in it, but right before, a few months, in fact, I never tried to figure that out, but she had, her grandmother had passed away, and she had left her a little money, not much, but enough to finish our house. So she had really put that money in there. And I didn't mind. I mean, I didn't necessarily want to claim my house. I couldn't have lived there. I was too far from anywhere.
You were isolated out there.
The only way that worked is if I was married to a sighted person with a car.
And she was a sighted person with a car.
With a car. In other words, because I was 8 miles to anything. Fast food.
So you called her and you said, I'll be out. You can have the house.
I just walked away. I tell my wife today, I took my toolbox and two pair of raggedy-ass blue jeans.
And walked off.
And walked away.
And went to your mama's.
Went to my mommy's.
Yeah.
Bless her soul.
And your daddy was still alive then? Or
no, my dad was dead.
Your dad had passed away by then.
This is about 87.
So you moved in with your mama.
Yeah. She was still working. She later retired. And even then, probably she was in the very beginning, the beginning stages of Alzheimer's, probably.
Yeah, but you didn't know it.
Didn't know it at the time.
Yeah. And then you did, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most interesting things you've ever done. You bummed around this is in Tomball, Texas,
Tomball, Texas.
That time was a suburb. It was not part of Houston. It is now. But then it was a standalone town.
And still is. It still has its mayor. I mean, its own city council, its own school district, its own everything.
But it's pretty much surrounded by
Houston. Yeah.
By Houston. But it was a standalone
little town,
and you walked all around that little town, and you decided you needed a job. I'm laid around. I read all the books I'm going to read and fussed at my mom and smoked cigarettes enough. Done enough whiskey drinking. It's time for me to find a job.
That's
so
right.
You went in. Go ahead.
Well, I just went. I got up one morning, and normally my mom would probably see me sitting there drinking a brewski.
Yeah.
And so that got showered, shaved, got out. And she said, well, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to get a job. And so I went down the different places, went to the Golden Corral. I was actually applying for a specific job. I wanted to be a dishwasher. I figured that's one thing I could do. Nobody had bugged me. You know, I just had never done it before in my life, but I said, okay. And so the guy at the Golden Corral was a real jerk. Nah, you know, I don't know. And I was older, there again, than most, you know. And anyway, walked across the street, got across this big, busy street. It's 1249 now, anyway. Yeah. There was a little restaurant sitting there called The Hangar. In fact, I had a bicycle by then. That's another story. I was riding. So I pushed my bike across this busy street, parked it out front, went in. You know, who's in charge? Well, I am. Do you have any openings? What do you want to do? Well, dishwashing. No, babe, I'm sorry. We really don't. And I said, oh, okay, you know, thank you. Yeah. And she said, care for a cup of coffee? Yeah, that drunk coffee. And I said, well, you know, if anything turns up, let me know. Walked out the door and was getting ready to saddle up on my bicycle, and here she came. She said, what's your phone number? And I gave it to her. Anyway, long story short, she called me at 5:30 the next morning.
And my dishwasher didn't show up. Would you
like to work?
And you went and at that moment in your life, that was a wonderful thing to have happen to you.
Well,
you needed a job.
Yeah, and after I was there like 2 days, you know, she was a pretty square. And I said, you know, I can only make so much money. They wanted you to work 7 days a week. So make a long story short, I got my check, but I got a lot of money in cash.
Yeah.
And worked weekends, 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. But it was good at the time. It was good therapy.
It was good therapy. Those hours you weren't drinking. Those hours you were, and you kind of became not a manager, but you kind of run the kitchen for her.
I kind of, you know, the cooks, because the cooks would come and go. So I kind of became a good prep cook. Naturally, the cook's in charge of the kitchen.
Yeah.
But I mean, I sort of made their life. I had my little routine down to a science. So they liked it when I was there. And I just always kind of helped them.
You know,
so
if they needed an extra guy to fry an egg, you could.
I could, or do certain things. Like the eggs were there, I could do the toast and bacon while they were, you know. So
yeah, and otherwise you'd have just been standing or
just
there.
Just standing or
I remember this story you told me about one time the cook didn't show up and you were saying stuff like, "Now you've got those yeast rolls warming in the oh my god," you know.
That's right.
You were telling me because you knew the routine to get lunch going. Y'all just did breakfast and lunch, and they closed at 2, and that was it.
Right.
For the Hangar.
Yep, there. I was usually there about 5 in the morning, and then walked. Well, I mean, we closed at 2, but it took you till 3 or 3:30 to clean up. So,
and we're talking. This is a 46-year-old man, blind man, divorced. Just went out and found yourself a job as a dishwasher.
Yes, sir.
They'll always hire a dishwasher.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to do
it. Nobody wants to do it.
So
you are the lowest form of human
You
life.
Blind guys sitting at home doing nothing. If there's a restaurant close, go tell them you want to wash dishes and you'll be there every day. And you'll have yourself a job. Don't cry about it and, you know, get over it. All right, so you dishwashed a while, and you got tired of it. But at that time, you kind of became kind of independent, like you'd take off from dishwashing and go to Vegas.
Yeah, that was sort of a deal I had. I said, you know, I don't do much, but when I do it, I like to go to Las Vegas once in a while. And I said, so that's the only time I would ever want off. And she said, well, I can take care of that. And so she had a little lady that would do just that, like to work 2 or 3 days in a row, but that's all. And maybe once every 2 or 3 months, she was just pretty good. So even at the last, Sue's was the manager's name, and she even would take me to the airport. I'd say, okay, Sue, 2 weeks Friday I'm going. Okay, how long are you going to be gone? Coming back Tuesday. Okay.
Well, and one of the waitresses there became quite attached to you.
We shared a thing or two.
Cohabited a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Could be. Well, blind guy does well, you know. I see nothing wrong with that. Those were your mid-40s years.
Yeah, kind of like my second, not going to call it my second childhood. I wasn't having what do these guys do that buy the sports car in their 40s and go out? I wasn't doing that. Actually, I was sort of a late bloomer. I was just kind of getting started, you know.
Well, you'd been through a marriage. You'd been through Fox, working at Fox, where you figured you'd work the rest of your life.
Yeah, you know, I did. I didn't anticipate all the mergers, and like I say, but a lot of that was just simply these companies downsizing because the film business was dying quicker than anybody imagined.
And then here came digital.
Yeah.
I have no idea who that is. Should we answer it?
Oh, why not?
Yes.
This is Dennis. I came in there the other morning and brought you my tape.
Oh, you're the songwriter. Dennis, you need to call Brian. I'm tied up with somebody right now.
Okay, well, he wasn't answering his phone. I didn't know if y'all had communicated.
I've talked to him, but I can't give you any answers. I think he's done chord charts to some of your songs, though.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you very much.
Give him a call, okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's the guy that's going to spend some money with me.
All right, we like Dennis.
He doesn't know it yet, but let's see if we get it down to one. Did you hear that? Anyway, so you just kind of bummed around, and fooled around, and quit the dishwashing job, and then you decided did you have any other jobs other than that?
No, actually, I was, you know, Connie and I were together, and I still had the job. We had an apartment, and the lease was running out on the apartment, and I kind of decided it was better for her to move to this apartment, and I would move to someplace else.
Time to go.
And then I also had entered the computer world. I bought a computer, and I did not know to turn it on, and that was it.
And that was it.
And somebody just said to me, well, why don't you go down there to the junior college, to Tomball College? They have all kind of classes. Old people take them all the time. They'll teach you how to do computers.
So away you went.
So away I went down there, and I walked into the registrar's office, and I said, I want to take a continuing education class about computers. Oh, well, you can do that. She said, but why don't you take a regular class and get college credit for it? And I said, ma'am, I would have to hunt up. I haven't been to high school in 30 years. I'd have to get my transcript and all that. She said, well, we'll give you the first semester to do it, and I'll help you get them. So anyway, well, to make a long story short, I signed up for 4 classes.
Why not?
Math and whatever, and just went on from there, finished all the 64 hours that I needed to go to Sam Houston State in, I don't know, a year and a half, and then went on up to Huntsville.
Why, because to go to Sam Houston, you had to have an associate degree?
No, I didn't. You just had to it was just easier for me to get the hours there in Tomball, but then that's all they offered. I had to move on to...
And so you did some college and decided, well, hell, I could do this. Why don't I go get a degree?
That's right.
And you were 48, 49 years old, close to 50? Because you called me from Sam Houston when you were the day you were 50.
Yeah.
I guess it was...
That would have been in
92.
Actually, y'all came and got me in 91. I came over here to some kind of little function.
I think we...
You were still on Norris Street.
I was still on Norris Street. You're back from your mic. I'm turning you...
Oh, I'm sorry. No. I finished in 95, actually.
You just decided, I'm going to go get a degree in history.
Yeah.
But you didn't get a teaching certificate.
I did not. And I got my degree in geography.
What's in geography?
Uh-huh.
Why did I think it was
in
history?
Well, my master's is.
Is what's going to be?
Is.
Master's is.
My master's is in history, yes. I got that, too.
On Sam Houston.
Right.
I'm trying to have a drink. You have to talk while I'm...
Okay. And,
Anyway, you went off to school at age 48, 46, and got yourself a degree.
Got two of them.
Which is pretty brave and kind of unusual, and, you know.
Yeah, you know, I was intimidated for about 30 seconds. But oddly enough, there were a lot of older people there.
Yeah.
A lot of teachers that were our teachers coming back to add hours or to upgrade to get their degrees. And You know, I made a wrong choice in not getting my teacher certification. However, as things worked out with my knowledge of Braille, which I guess we'll talk about later, it all worked out.
It all worked out great.
Yes.
It all worked out fine. So in 95, you say you finished in 95.
Yeah, I think they put the wrong date on my ring. They made my ring. I think my ring says 96, but I did it in 95, I think.
And so shortly after that, right around that time, your friend, you had met Don Shaw.
Right.
You become friends with him. In fact, Don worked at Fox with you.
Yeah, I hired as many blind people after I got in a position where I could hire. I hired many, you know, well, more than a half a dozen blind people, because it was just a perfect job. They were good workers, mostly.
Uh-huh.
And it was a job that was just cut out for blind people.
But I think Don's wife was working for you. Mary was working for you. And you all came in from Dallas. And there was Mary Shaw and... She and Don got acquainted and got married.
That's true. Yeah, Fox had transferred me to Dallas in 73, and I stayed up there a year. That's where we met John Conley, who's been a guest on the show,
and everybody knows about you.
Yeah, and so then Don Shaw came back to and that, I mean, that's sort of how we tied in. I heard he was just a kid, you know, I mean, 18 years old or whatever, and then he met Mary, who worked there, and they married and been married 20 many years.
30 years or so. But you all that Fox stuff was over, and all that was over, and you and Don had lived in Tomball, and he lived in Conroe for a while, and he lived in Tomball, and he moved around. Don likes to move around. Anyway, he's in Lufkin permanently. But by the time you got out of school, he was making plans to move to Lufkin.
He was making plans to move to Lufkin, yeah.
And
so I had actually, you know, we had driven up here one time with my first wife. That's the one, maybe the only time you met her.
The only time I ever met her.
Okay.
You and her came up.
But so at this time, when I was still in school, Don and Mary still lived in Conroe.
Yeah.
Because one time I got on my bicycle in Tomball and rode 26 miles to their house and spent the night, and then rode the 30 miles to Huntsville the next day to go register for school, and then my mother drove up and picked me and the bicycle up.
That's pretty good riding, man. My heavens.
And so anyway, but when I finished school, they had, you know, we did the one blind weekend, maybe the first one. Do you remember? And my friend flew us
up. The first one was in 94, in April of 94.
Don Shaw and I and this fellow named Wade Atkins flew us up from Huntsville on his little airplane.
Yeah.
And we came, and so that was the... That was Don. I think when he came up here then, maybe he just kind of got all wrapped up in Lufkin.
That's the first time you'd been to this house, to the house on Southwood, I think.
Yeah, I knew.
Last time you'd seen me was on Norris Street.
Right.
So you came to Southwood House. Don moved up here. I think one of Mary's sisters was lived in Tyler. Well, of course, she always lived in Tyler. But then I think maybe Kathy was moving up here. There was a reason at the time that they decided they wanted to live in Lufkin, Texas. They decided it was a nice town. They'd been up here and visited me a couple times. They got with Aunt Peggy and found a house they liked. And bingo, I think 96, Don Shaw moved, or maybe 97, Don Shaw moved to Lufkin, Texas.
I think he moved in 96 because I moved up here on July the 2nd of 97.
So here were two of your friends, me and Don Shaw, both living in Lufkin. So you said, Mom, guess what?
I'm going to Lufkin. And actually bought a house. I had started out buying a lot next door to Don and Mary.
Yeah, we're going to build a house.
And I was up here one day kind of to look over the mowing and lack of it on that lot. And the lady walked out, said, well, who are you? And I said, well, I'm buying this lot here. And she said, buying that lot? Why don't you buy this house? And I said, what house? She said, my house. Anyway, this woman wanted to move so badly, and she had been recently divorced or whatever and was moving on, and so she quoted me this for her equity. I told her, nope, I could only pay that, and we got together with the guy who was financing. It was individual financing, so we'd have to mess with any bank. So anyway, I bought the house.
Yeah.
And my mother came. She said, well, I want to go wherever you go.
I'm going where Bubba goes.
And the neat thing about the house is it was two stories. I had upstairs two rooms and a bath,
uh-huh.
And she had two nice rooms downstairs and her own bath, and then we had the common.
Well, originally Marlene was going to have it one bedroom, and she was going to have a bedroom, and they shared a common bath, remember?
I don't think, though, she ever planned to really stay.
Marlene?
We talked about that, but she had told me when we were leaving Tomball,
yeah.
She said, well, she better go with you because I'm not staying here.
Yeah.
And so, actually, she was sort of out of the picture. That's my sister.
Well, Marlene was there for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, she stayed for about a month.
She stayed for a little while,
yeah.
And it was really the perfect house to do that in because you had a kitchen and everything. But that house had some problems. You did a lot of work on that house to improve it.
Yeah, I did. I tied into, in some cases, a little too much, but I got it done.
Yeah.
I could not do that now. I don't even know exactly how I did that. And then Ruby, my mother, her health began to really deteriorate. We started out first. I could manage her while I was at work. She was fine because she smoked. She was getting old. Then we had to have a caregiver for 2 hours a
yeah.
day, then 4 hours a day, then 8 hours a day. And then finally, she had to go in the nursing home. And at that point, the neighborhood was, let's say, changing, and it was a good opportunity. I had put the house up for sale, and almost 6 months to the day, actually, I lacked 2 weeks on my contract. I had 35 or 40 lookers, but not one bid, not one offer, not one anything. And so a guy called me on the phone that, my wife now, Emily, well, we were married then. Ruby had gone. The caregivers were gone. Ruby was gone to the nursing home.
Well, you're skipping over your and what was it, 99? When I called Emily and she needed somebody.
I went to
computers
work.
Were coming in, and Emily didn't know anything about computers, and she needed somebody who knew computers and Braille. And I said, bingo, have I got a deal for you? So she called Don Patterson, who knew computers and Braille, and hired him to be a VI teacher at Lufkin High School.
Yeah, actually, the way this happened is Phil, when I moved up here in 97, he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, I don't know. I found a job. You ought to call Emily Wilson. Okay, what does she do? Well, she's a teacher. Teaches blind kids. Okay, I'll do that. Well, a year passed. I was just kind of busy doing nothing. Getting the house. I loved the house. I loved everything. Boy, getting it all. But anyway, then I did. I saw Phil again. I mean, later. And he says, why don't you ever call Emily? You ought to call Emily. So sure enough, I called her. Well, Emily had just gotten a new student. Like the 2 days before I called her. And Emily is a VI teacher, but Braille is not her strong. She hates it. She will teach it. She's capable of teaching it, but she hates it. And computers, yep. She doesn't really know.
So she was fixing to quit that job.
She was going to do something, and I called her, and nobody was there. And finally, her then husband, I talked to him one Sunday at lunch. I said, well, I hate to bother you, but, you know, is Ms. Wilson there, blah, blah. And so anyway, Emily tells the story. He came. He said, you need to call that man. You need to call that man. And so she did, and she said she asked me something, and I said, Braille, and that's all. She said, I'll see you. Where can I see you? What's your address? And because she wanted to come and look me over and see if I wasn't weird was her take on it.
Yeah, I think that's the way she puts it. I wanted to check you out for the weirdness factor.
And so she came and talked, and then they hired me at Lufkin High School.
And
Lufkin School District.
And you worked at Lufkin School District for 3 or 4 years, didn't
about you? Four, almost five. Even after she left and went on, I stayed an extra year.
At Lufkin?
Uh-huh. Lufkin Middle School and High. Well, I went everywhere.
Yeah.
Just were all over the district.
Teaching blind kids. Because Emily didn't know computers. She does now. But at that time, she didn't have it. Computers were scaring her to death. And she knew they were coming, and she was going to teach this kid computers.
Yeah, I was the technology aide, actually,
yeah.
Or paraprofessional, as they call it. They paid
yeah.
me good money, and I serviced all their computers for their blind and JAWS and all that, and then worked with the Braille students and Braille. I embossed. We had an embosser, so.
You did a good bit of Brailing
uh-huh.
for kids. And Emily's situation was deteriorating, and you and her got together and eventually got married.
And
you are now.
And are now very happy, very happily married.
Out in live out off 1194.
Built a new house in four? It was going to be four in January. Yeah, this coming February.
Built house in 2004.
Yeah, and we're on about 3.5 acres and have a pool, have 4 dogs and 2 cats and...
That's the way love is, boy.
2 or 3 cars and a moped and a tractor and...
Yeah, what else could a guy...
Accordions.
$11,000 worth of accordion equipment. What else could a guy want? But anyway, you sold it. Emily had a big house that she'd raise her kids in, her family. She sold that big house. You sold your big house, and you got together and built a house.
Yeah, I was a little ahead of myself. I'd forgotten about getting a job, but we... she had had her house up first, yeah, listed with this real estate lady, and I was going to use her, and I said, yeah, and I said, I don't like that woman, so I used somebody else, and even the woman that I didn't use was curious about that. But anyway, I had mine 6 months. I had 30 lookers. I never got one offer. Emily's house had been up for over a year, and it was just looking really, and then a private individual got a hold of Emily that bought houses for a doctor here in Lufkin as an investment. Uh-huh. And she says, well, your contract, let it run out in 2 weeks, and we'll deal. And she made me an offer right then. And she said, well, if you sell the real estate, you'll have to pay her this, so we'll give you this. And I was happy. And I swear to goodness, 2 days later, after her house had been on the market for a year, and so Emily sold hers. So there we were. So
it
then
couldn't
have
worked out better.
We turned around and rented the house back from the guy, the doctor that bought it from me.
Lived there while you were building your house.
And lived there for 6 months. Well, without a lease, he said, well, yeah, I know y'all are anxious to get in your house. You just give me 20 days and tell me when, you know? And so that all, I mean, it was just, it couldn't have been any better. Couldn't have been more perfect.
Well, sir, we've killed an hour.
Well, that's great. It's been fun.
And we came out exactly when we just kind of finished the end of... So as a blind person, your life has been up and down, but you've had a good life. You can't say you haven't.
It's been great. You know, when I was younger, like anybody else that can't drive a car, that's all you study about. But you get over that short order. Certain parts of it you'll never get over.
Yeah,
you know, it still makes me mad when I go out. Like, or if you have a little tiff, she jumps in her car, she can go and I can't. You know, I think I've heard you express
it's the same exact sentiment. She can leave and I can't.
They get mad and leave, and I go, well, hell, I'm mad because I can't leave.
Yeah. And then you get even madder. All right, on that note, we'll close it down. Don Patterson, 60, fixed to be 65. Partially blind in Lufkin, Texas. You hear him every week on the Blind Handyman Show. Thank you, sir.
I enjoyed it.
I appreciate
great.
It. All right, yes. Don, Marlon Patterson. They're in Colorado right now. Some kind of a big car rally. Anyway, if you want a guest on the show, and we'd love to have you no matter who you are, give me a call, 936-634-9500, or email me, phil@philparr.net. Or philparr@consolidated.net. Either one will work. And we'd love to hear from you. If you maybe you know somebody you think would be a good guest, well, send me their contact information. And I'll call them right up and get them to do the show. We always need guests. We do about 80 of these things a year between Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me. So we need about 80 guests per year. If you're a handyman person, you can come on the Handyman Show and talk about that. We'd love to have you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week with another edition of Blind Like Me. Bye-bye.